Welcome to the Launch Hour with Ron Reardon and Bill McHenry.
Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting here from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Ron Reardon. My co-host is Bill McHenry. Bill, how are you doing today?
Just super, Ron. Absolutely great.
Well, you know, Bill, on Launch, we focus on the launching of a business so that entrepreneurs can successfully navigate their launch. And this morning, we're going to be featuring Ellen Urich of Stony River Capital Partners and Stage 2 Business Accelerator. But before we get started, Bill, could you thank today's sponsor?
I sure will, Ron. Today, our sponsor is Patents & More. Patents & More, protecting your innovation and connecting you to the resources you need for success.
And we really appreciate their support. Well, you know, I've known Alan for several years. He and I kept bumping into each other as we went to different networking events, and then we got to know each other a whole lot better. He's a principal there at Stony River Capital Partners, which is an angel-backed consultancy with over 17 direct partners. His background includes HBO and company, where he was part of a team that saw an organization's expansion and from an initial startup of under $3 million to over $180 million in revenue and within 12 years, and then it was actually sold for $13.8 million. He's also an instructor at Georgia State University at the J. Mac Robinson College of Business, and he's done nonprofit work, including expanding St. Vincent de Paul Society here in Atlanta. Welcome to the show, Alan.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Ron and Bill. Appreciate it.
Okay. Well, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs, when they're getting started, it's they're always looking for money, okay, and they've got questions about money and investors. Alan, why do investors invest their hard-earned money in a private equity investment?
They do this because they can get a much better return on a private equity investment than what they can do in the general market. If you look at an index fund and what it's done over the couple of years compared to private equity, private equity, you can usually get up to about 50%. With our partners, what we do is we get about 4 out of 10 companies that go north. And they get a lot more money from them than what they would do in the open market. And so that's what they do. It's for returns, mostly. Some of it's that they are a little bit, they want to change some society issues. I'm looking at one in Arkansas right now that would be very, I'm kind of passionate about, because what they're doing is some good stuff in breast cancer research.
Oh, wow. What kind of companies do you look for when you're doing the research, Alan?
Well, I look for 5 areas in companies. First thing I look for is the management. And under the management, I look for 4 areas. Because I learned long ago that when you can have a good management team, the product, to me, which is the mule, that's the area that is really that takes you forward. But the management team under there, first thing I look for is passion. I like them to have the passion for it. Second thing I look for is trust. And trust isn't them as a person. To me, that's character and the fourth characteristic. But the trust is that they can, they have enough business savvy that as the world changes, that they can change their business with how the world changes. Third thing I look for is optimism. It's by gum. I understand that Uncle George says that I can't do this, but I am going to do it. Things like that. Second thing I look for is a good market opportunity. I like over a $500 million market opportunity, and for them to know what their segment within that particular market is. I believe strongly in the long tail thing, that you got to go for one little segment of that market, and if their market is $500 million, that's great. The third thing I look for is a business strategy. How do you get from A to Z? A being the very beginning, where you understand what the opportunity is, and Z being what the exit strategy is. Sometime I'd like to talk to you about the Zurich axioms and how the Swiss take risk as opposed to Americans. We take risk differently, is that we will get to a certain point, let's say, where we, at the very beginning, we're happy with $20 million, and then we get to $20 million that we can sell the company for, and we say, by gum, perhaps I can go to $40 million. The Swiss don't do that. What they do is that they get to $20 million and they will sell the company. No difference. Fourth thing I look for is customers. I like customers, and I want to make sure that the customers see value in the company. And the fifth thing I look for is financials and an even flow of that. I don't like hockey sticks. I don't believe in hockey sticks. I believe in just growing a company very practically and very methodically. At the very beginning, what you're doing is that when you do your business plans, what you're doing is you're throwing it on the wall and seeing what sticks. I think I teach business plans at Georgia State University at the undergraduate level. And one of the things I emphasize is at the very beginning, what you do is do a simple business plan. You throw it on the wall and see what sticks on that wall. And when you do that, about a year down the road, do a more comprehensive one, because then you'll know who your customers are and what value that you offer them. Those are about the five areas that I really look for in that.
It's interesting you comment about the Swiss. I have a good friend that's from Florida. He's from Switzerland. And his philosophy of business and investing is totally different. And you nailed it. He picks a target, and when it gets to that target, he's done. He doesn't fiddle around after that.
Yeah, there's a great book out there called The Zurich Axions. And if one of your listeners wants to email me, I'd be glad at ayurik@stonyrivercapital.com. I'd be glad to send them a Cliff Notes version of that. But it is just a great way of doing it. What I was just talking about, that example, was called greed. And we Americans are greedy at times. You know, most of us would be happy with $20 million in our pockets. You know, and the Swiss, what they do is that they get to the $20 million, and what they'll do is that they will go to the they will go on to their next project. Different philosophies.
Yeah, from what I've heard you saying there, Alan, if somebody comes to you with just an idea on a napkin, then it's just way too soon for them to be talking to you.
It is too soon, because what they are at that stage is just what I call a fruit stand. I want to make sure that fruit stand can be grown into a factory. A fruit stand to me is something that it does not have any, is not scalable, is not systemized, and is very highly dependent on the entrepreneur. When you go into the factory, that's where you get into the scalability of it and the systems. And that's what we did at HBLC, is that at the very beginning, we were just a little fruit stand, but we were putting in the systems together to retain and to get new people. To attract new people, what you need to do is you have to have that fruit stand, because people need health insurance, they need different plans, saving plans, they need bonuses and things like that. And that's what you're doing, is that you're trying to get them, you're trying to get your company over to that particular area. And at the very beginning, it's very difficult to do that. That's one of the things that we're doing. One of the things that that we talked a little about is what we're doing in the old Macy's building downtown at 200 Peachtree. And what we're doing down there is to make an accelerator down there to really help young companies grow from that fruit stand into the factory, using various tools and understanding the process that you're growing from one to the other.
So what are the different models to receive a private equity investment?
Well, the models is, first of all, show a great opportunity out there that is really that makes a private equity person salivate. And so what you want to do is you want to make the private equity person feel that they cannot pass up that opportunity. It might be personal to them. It might be something that shows them a great deal of money. Hopefully it's both of them. You know, that it's personal to them, that something that happened. This company I was talking about in University of Arkansas that I saw when I judged the Moot Bowl in Austin, Texas, is called Tears for a Life. And what it does is take a teardrop from a woman's eye and test it for breast cancer. And what I was thinking of was, I was thinking of my grandma's who passed on from breast cancer, my mother who had it, and I've got a daughter and two granddaughters, and I want to make sure that they're protected from that. And the way they presented it at the very beginning to really pull me in was that they said, think of the eight most important women in your life. Chances are one of them will get breast cancer, and that's how prevalent it is in society.
That's powerful.
It was very powerful to me. And that's what you want to do. It got me as, here's a great investment opportunity, and here's something that you can do for society. But that's just me. There's other reasons. A lot of private equity people, what they will do is they will do invest, especially venture capitalists, and put companies in their portfolio that are similar in the similar industry. And so that they, what they can do is they can go from one, they can leverage what one opportunity is in one company with another opportunity in their portfolio, and they can, the synergy between them will make them a little bit more powerful and grow both of them, because the venture capital firm wants to grow their portfolio. So I would advise your listeners that if they want to, what they can do is see who's investing in their particular industry by going to pwcmoneytree.com, and they can slice and dice that particular website from PricewaterhouseCoopers, and they can see how to who is investing in their particular industry and try to align themselves with someone else, because it will grow the company. It will help the company grow also by having someone that can use their products.
What was that website again, Alan? PwC what now?
Money Tree. MoneyTree.com. And you can go there, and what you can do is you can just slice and dice and say, if you're looking at green stuff, green industry, what you can do is you can go there and look at the green and who's investing in the green things, and then segment it down to, if they're investing in green housing, who is investing in green housing, or if green chemicals, or whatever. It's a great website for understanding who's investing what. But that's for venture capital, folks. So if you're looking for angels who invest in that, there's trade groups that do that. There's angel trade group, and I forgot the name of it right off the hand, but they have a... what they do is that they have annual meetings so that angel investors can go there, and what they can do is they can see what the newest trends in angel investing. Angel is a private equity where a person invests their own money into it, as opposed to a venture capital firm. Think of venture capital firms as a mutual fund where someone will put in maybe $500,000, and you get 200 people putting in $500,000 each, and you have a fund of about $100 million, which the managing partners invest. And there's managing partners and limited partners. The limited partners are the people who put the money in, but the managing partners are the ones who make the decision where to invest.
Alan, one of the questions I have, besides the green area, what do investors look for in a good investment besides that? And, you know, as you were talking a little earlier also, is the difference between angel and venture capital funds. I think that would be real interesting for our audience to understand the difference in the two of them as well.
Well, like I said, venture capital is a whole group where people do put limited, they put in pieces of money, and it might be $500,000 into a fund, and what happens is that you pull all of that together, and then you got a big fund, and then the investors, the managing partners, do invest that, and they usually invest in one industry. It might be entertainment, or it might be in healthcare information technology, and things like that. So, that's how that works, pretty much. An angel usually is, that's a little bit softer. Angels usually go up to about $1.8 million, where a venture capital fund has gone down to about $1 million, but usually they stick at about $2 million and go up north from there.
Yeah, Alan, over the years you've talked to me about the importance of the management team and betting on the jockey and not the horse. Could you tell our listeners a little bit more about what investors look for in the management team?
Yeah, the management team, they're looking for credibility. They're looking for a person who can move them further in the business. They're looking for people that have been there, done that before, that have a proven track record, and that can move that company forward. I learned long ago when you can sell pet rocks as just a pet that doesn't mess on your carpet. What you can do is you can sell just about anything. And so what you're doing is you're looking for the management team that is that can take it to the next level, that can put the scale into it, can put the systems into place, that is committed to the idea, is passionate about it, and has the know-how of how to do it because he or she has done it before. And that's what investors are looking for. Sometimes I get a lot of companies that come to me and they've never done it before. It's a great idea, but they're just not the jockey that can carry it forward. I also look on management teams. I look at four different types of people and making sure that all four are represented on the team. I look for the entrepreneur who is the extroverted, task-focused people. And if you put in, just draw a, put an X on your paper, and this is the top left quadrant where they're task-focused and they're also extroverted. And then you look for the introverted person who's task-focused but a little introverted. And that person is more the CFO, the person who really can dot the I's and cross the T's. And then you're looking for the salesperson who couldn't cross a T or dot an I to save his or her life, you know, because you need that person, but they can go out and they can smooth people and they can make sure that those people are really brought into the fold. And that person should be able to turn it over to perhaps the introverted, task-focused person who can get the contract signed and get everything done. And then the fourth area that you're looking at, and I consider that in the bottom right quadrant, is the person who's the peacemaker, because you have a lot of highly energized people there, and they get very passionate about there, and sometimes a little bit out of control is what I'm sure you've seen. And what you need to do is you need to pull them in. And so this peacemaker is the person who can say, hey, everything's going to be fine and we're going to move ahead and things like that. But you need all four of those type of people in the team. Another thing that you also need is the people that share various aspects that they think similarly and in regards to their lifestyles and like that. You can't have one person that's just an absolute wild person and have another person that is just too calm on that. You need some similarity on the cultures, you know, from what they are, you know, and a dedication. I think leaders, what they do is that they give the vision and they give the mission, and the execution of that vision and mission is up to the managers. That's what I was doing. I always said, this is how you do it. And I think I remember one case where I was a senior manager, and there's a manager under me, and there's another manager under that person. And what happened was I just, at the very beginning of the meeting, I pulled us all out and I said, two of us should not be here because it's only one person's decision. And we figured it out. It was the second person's decision. It wasn't my decision to make at that particular time. I might not like the decision that was made, but that's a whole different thing. It was a second person's decision. He did not give it to the third person. And so, that's the way I think, is that was that particular one was not my decision. So I went and did something else, and the third person did too. There should be just one decision maker in a meeting who can make those decisions, in my thoughts.
Ellen, you talked a lot about what investors look for in a market opportunity already, but tell us a little bit on what investors look for in a business strategy.
Great question. What they look for in a business strategy is the ability to have an end point. And the end point is either selling off the company or they get their money back if it's convertible debt. That's what they look for, is some strategy that they can get their investment back, because they want to move on. They don't want their investment to be in their for a very long time. 10 years is a very long time. 5-7 years is a good time for their investment to be there. They want to be able to move into another project at that particular time. So that's what they're looking for, and that's what investors, but also a way to scale the company and the business strategy, how they're going to scale the company, and that could be a sales and marketing strategy. Are they going through distributors the indirect way, or are they going direct? Are they going to hire a sales force, and how tenable is that? And what have other people, other companies in that same industry done to achieve success? So those are some of the things that they're looking for in a business strategy. Those particular areas, I think, are extremely important.
Well, I know that, as a company grows and gets robust, of course, you're going to have customers, to get the cash flow and everything. But why are customers at an early stage business so critical?
They're very critical because there's two ways to looking at investment. One is that you start with the opportunity, and both of them start with the opportunity, that you've leveraged the opportunity and you understand what the business opportunity is that you're going to exploit. One way is that you go to get customers first, and then the third, if you picture in your mind, the second is getting customers, and the third is then getting private equity. The second model goes into the opportunity, but getting private equity first and getting customers after you get the private equity. My preference is always the first one, where you get customers who see value in that, because your money will be much cheaper if you get the customers and then get the private equity after that, because you will understand that the investor will understand that, yeah, someone will be buying this. But if you go to the second model with the private equity first, the investor does not know whether someone's going to buy your widget. They just do not know at that particular time. And so I always advise young entrepreneurs to go and get some customers out there. Take a tank of gas and go out there and round up some customers, get them, because your money will be cheaper and you'll have more to keep for your family.
Now, why are financials so important to note when you're starting out? And aren't they just guesses at that stage?
Pretty much anything past 3 years is a guess. But at the very beginning, it gives you some idea about how they project the companies to grow. It does give you some up to about 3 years. Again, after 3 years, it's pretty much of a guess. I see so many hockey sticks at the end of 3 years that we're just going to go great and move up. All investors want is very methodical growth on the financials. At that particular stage, it's something to note, and there's other folks that will think that they're number one. I just don't think that they're number one. I think that the financial and the money will come if you've got a good product and you've got a good team behind it and a great market opportunity. I think it will come. And financials, I like young entrepreneurs to think more about growing and scaling the company up practically than I do on financials. I think that financials give you a benchmark, but they're not the ultimate on all the on the whole thing. I think that when you're growing a company, but that's my opinion on that.
Well, Alan, you talked about the market opportunity and the management team and the business strategy and exit strategy and the financials, but where's the product or service fit in all of this?
Well, the product has to be a solid product. I'm not discounting that, and I talked about the five areas, but I'm not discounting the product. The product needs to be part of the opportunity. The opportunity, you have to know that is there to make a business out of it and to make money. I'm not discounting that. The product has to be, but to me, the product's just like a meal. It's there to carry the rest of the areas around, things like that. I've seen great products with with a lousy management team. And I would certainly rather have an A management team with a B product than a B management team with an A product. I've just seen so many that go wrong. One of the things that does happen is that the management team at the very beginning, if they can't transition themselves into where they can be scaled up. I see a lot of founders that aren't willing to give up control. I was in Vegas about a year ago and with a suit and tie in August, which is not a comfortable experience, but I had to give someone the impression that I was getting serious. They would not move the product out of R&D. I thought it should be commercialized at that stage, and I told them 6 months before that, go into commercialization. By gum, you're done with version one, and you need to move into version. You're working on version two because a lot of R&D people will not be. They're never done with version one, and what they don't understand at times is that the world evolves. And if you're taking a year and a half to work on version one, put a stake in that ground and say, by gum, we're working on version two. And on version two, what I think you should do is you should involve the customers, have users groups at that particular time. And customers should come in there and say, yeah, I really like these features and functions and things like that. But, you know, if you added this, I don't see anyone else on the landscape that is doing this particular feature, and you might consider putting that on. There's a great book, Only the Paranoid Survive, by Andy Grove, that's out there, and he talks about the strategic inflection point. And the strategic inflection point is where in a product's lifestyle cycle someone is going to catch up with you. At HBLC, one of the things that happened was in 1981, people were beginning to smell the money and they were catching up with us. And so what we had to do is we had to add new product lines. We started with a hospital information technology system, and we had to add new product lines. So we added a pharmacy information system that was discrete. Then we added a laboratory information system that was discrete. Then we added a radiology information system that was discrete. And you have all these other add-on modules to make your particular business more valuable, and that's when you get to the enterprise level. I think that there's five levels of a company's growth. The first is, I got this wonderful idea. It's when the light bulb goes on in your mind. The second is when you understand the opportunity, the business opportunity that you have. Third stage is when you've got some paying customers out there, and they see value also. Not just that you see value, but they see value. And they say, hey, this is better than the way I'm doing things. The fourth level is when you're beginning to scale up. And the fifth level is when you're building enterprise value. And that's what we were doing when we were adding new product lines. Because someone's going to catch up to you. They're going to be looking over your shoulder. They're going to see what you do. And they're going to catch up to you. You can, at that particular stage, we were talking about the business strategy. At that particular stage, what you can do is you can sell your company or you can add new products and make you more valuable in a different way. Do them. But that's why I think that...
You know, Alan, it kind of leads me... Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you. To a question. I actually have two different companies. One's a product manufacturing company and one's a service company. When you're talking about products, have you ever been involved in any investment in companies that are service-based?
Yes, that's a little softer to me. I have been involved in them. What you're doing is investing in the person, obviously, for that. And the product is the person. In those particular companies, what I like to do is make sure they have something a little bit more tangible. And it might be a checkoff list. If they're doing in, like now, right now, we're considering where all of us are looking at what's happening in Japan and the nuclear things that are going on there. If they had a checklist of here's all the things to check, and that list becomes proprietary, and Ron, you know this some of the process patents that are going in place right now. And you can talk a lot more about that than I can. But there's some of the things I like to have something that's a little bit hard, some secret sauce in there that can't be reproduced, you know, not replicated, things like that. That's what you're looking for in particular service companies. There's our investments in there, but you're always betting on the person, that person will continue on in that particular service company. And if it's a great service and no one else does that service, like if it's, for example, a green consulting service to get companies like Walmart greener, things like that, and you have a list, a checkoff list of all the different things you have, that could certainly be a good investment for a company. It's just that that hasn't been my particular background.
Sure. If you had to summarize your thoughts to our listeners, Alan, on private equity investment, what would it be? What would they be?
One of the things that you're doing is, to me, don't take private equity unless you absolutely need to. Leverage as much as what you can without taking private equity, because you can keep more to yourself. There's a couple reasons for this. Number one, you keep more for you and your family. Second thing is that you don't have a private equity person on your backside. And two, very important, because the private equity person is usually in there for one thing, and that's to get a better return for his or her investment and his partner's investment. And so I think those are very critical things. And the other thing is to make sure that you have a good management team out there that have all the areas that I talked about before, great market opportunity, and understand the cycle of where you're going. There's something out there called the Timmons model. And the Timmons model says at the very beginning, picture in your mind an upside down triangle where the point is at the very bottom, and it all starts with the founder. And from the founder, what happens is on the left side, there's this one little circle that says, hey, here's the opportunity. Then you go and you start, after you understand the opportunity, you start leveraging your team and understanding and putting the right people on your team that fill holes that you need. And in addition to that, after that, what it is, it's all about the resources. Understand the resources that you need at one time, at that time in the cycle of your company's and your business's growth. I think that that's what you're looking for. In private equity, people are looking for a very methodical and practical growth. They know that things are going to change in this world. They've changed by the time we come into the studio, the time we go out, things will change. We don't know what they are, but there'll be some things that are changing. And that's what you have to understand about this world, is that it's a constantly a revolving world. And so that's what some of the things that I would say that summarize my thoughts is that just make sure that you show a roadmap. And that roadmap has to be at the very beginning. You don't know what that roadmap is. And so throw it on the wall and see what sticks on that wall. And then about a year from now, you'll understand the value, you know, and you'll understand your customers, who your customers are, because you'll have lots of corridors to go down while you're testing that. You know, I think here's my customer. I think it's the vice president of sales. And, ooh, it's not that particular person. It's this other person down here who is the sales support person. They're the people that make the decision. The vice president of sales is a person who just, you know, gives the nod. And so you have to understand who your customer is, and don't be afraid of changing as you know who you think your customer is. I see what great entrepreneurs do is that they have this ability to change and to evolve and see, smell where the money is or could be.
I do some presentations, and I know I always tell people, you know, you,
you can envision where you want to end up. That's fine, but no, it's not going to be a straight line.
Never is a straight line. It's a very curvy line at times, and and that line has many breaks. You know, and that's good. That's what entrepreneurs like. They like that challenge of being, you know, I'm testing my mind and I want to go down this particular road. And but that's what it is, you know. And so,
well, Alan, this has been one incredible primer for entrepreneurs out there as far as investors are concerned. Really appreciate you being on our show today.
No problem. I enjoy it. Thank you.
Okay, I know our listeners appreciate you sharing your experiences and insights. It's another great show, Bill.
Gosh, man, it really was. Alan was full of just some great ideas and some real interesting information about angel investors and venture capitalists, too. It was really super. I also want to thank our sponsor today. Our sponsor was Patents and More, your trusted guide through the innovation jungle.
You can go to our blog at thelaunchhour.businessradio.x to listen again to today's show plus previous shows. This is Ron Reardon, Bill McHenry, signing off another great session of The Launch Hour.